Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this Honorable Court.
Thank you. Please be seated. This morning, the court has three matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their presentation, they are the John G. and Maria Stella Kennedy Memorial Foundation and Corpus Christi Diocese of the Roman Catholic Church versus David Dewhurst from Travis County, Jack A. Camps versus Helen A. Hood and others from Bosque County, and in the interest of C.H., a minor from El Paso County. The court has allotted 30 minutes for each side to present oral argument in the first cause and 20 minutes for each side in the second and third causes. The petitioner may reserve a portion of rebuttal time by advising the marshal of the court. We are recording these arguments, and you may purchase a tape of any argument from our clerk's office for a nominal fee. Justice Hankinson is unavoidably absent today, but she will participate in the deliberation and decision of each of these cases. Wallace Jefferson of the San Antonio Bar is listening today, and hopefully he'll be on the bench with us next week. Oh, Justice Hankinson is also recused.
Yeah, on this one.
Sorry. Justice Hankinson will participate in the second and third cases, but was recused anyway in this case. The court is ready to hear argument from petitioners in Kennedy Foundation versus Dewhurst.
May it please the court. Mr. Shannon Ratliff will present argument for the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 10 minutes for a rebuttal.
May it please the court. Mr. Chief Justice, I guess I've said on many occasions I'm delighted to be here, but I think so without fear of contradiction. I'm more delighted to be here this morning than perhaps on prior occasions. And at the same time, I'm also somewhat regretful. Regretful that I did such an absolutely abominable job of explaining what I believe to be the controlling law as it applies in this case. As I see what the court's opinion did, it seems to me that while there are many points at which I might have some disagreement, the nub of the issue is whether the court's opinion properly takes into account the requirements of Lutz versus State in determining the title boundary to a Spanish or Mexican law grant. In that regard, I believe that the court has misconstrued and misapplied Lutz. There are statements in the court's opinion in which it says that we cannot utilize that procedure because the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration will no longer certify the tidal values in the Laguna Madre, at least in certain portions of Laguna Madre, including this portion. In fact, the question of whether they certify, I will submit under the earlier opinion in Lutz versus State, is beside the point. In Lutz versus State.
Well, it may be beside the point, but the reason they won't certify is the point, isn't it? They won't certify because it doesn't measure tide, and tide is what mean high or high tide is supposed to represent.
I believe, with all due respect, Your Honor, I think that is exactly the nub of the problem. If you look at Lutz, and if you will count the references that Lutz makes any number of times in the majority opinion, it talks in terms of the readings of the highest water in the day. Now, NOAA has never said, and they do not say today, that a tide gauge located in this area or in any other area in the Laguna Madre will not accurately measure the height or vertical height of the water.
Are you now saying that we're not governed by mean high or high tide?
No, ma'am. What I'm saying is that mean high or high tide, as the court said in Lutz when it was dealing with this, it says the terms last mentioned, and they're referring to mean high tide and mean high water, are employed by the court and is universally understood, mean an average of all of the daily highest readings over a long period. And then they go on to talk about the 19-year tidal cycle.
So it's your position that Lutz doesn't use the mean higher high tide?
It is my position they use mean high tide as defined by them from that quote I just gave you. And I think I did this because
Was that your argument to this court before the motion for hearing? That Lutz did not require mean higher high tide, and that in fact your clients were not required to use mean higher high tide, but some other high tide. Was that your argument?
No, sir. I think as a matter of fact, I've gone back and looked at the briefs, and what I said at that time is, and we quoted as a matter of fact from one of the state's witnesses, that what our witness did was to take the average of the highest recorded water in each day and average it, and as we quoted Dr. Mike Speed, who was presented by the state, he said that is what Dr. Flick did, and that is what was called for by Lutz. And so I don't think this is a change of position. What I just read to you, the court says, as we use that term, it means an average of all of the daily highest readings over a long period. They say in other places that the reason that you use that a tide gauge does not record the difference between an astronomic tide and a tide caused by meteorological conditions. It simply records the vertical elevation of the water.
Well, let's go back.
All right,
Lutz does say you use the mean higher high tide. There any question about that? Your argument is, well, they really didn't mean higher high tide as defined by NOAA. They just meant the high level of the water on any given day.
I think that's right. But I would also say, Your Honor, I don't believe that's just me saying it. I think the quote I just read from Lutz is saying, the court says, as we employ that term. And so, and if you go through and count, and it is not uniform, I'll tell you, but if you go through there and look,
now, let's assume that you can't measure the mean higher high tide even as Lutz defines it. You say they define it, but the truth is it requires a periodic rising and falling in the water, which doesn't occur in the Laguna Madre. What evidence do you have, even as you now explain Lutz, what evidence do you have that you've located a boundary line based on a high tide, mean higher high tide, or any other tide?
The evidence we have is that the line that was employed by our surveyors is above the line of mean higher high water as determined by Dr. Flick and as had been determined at any time in any place in the Laguna Madre.
So even if Lutz applies, even if you say Lutz applies,
yes,
you do not have any evidence of what that line is.
Yes, sir, I do.
Because no, you have a line that's 1 foot above that, but you don't have a line that's based on mean higher high tide or mean higher high tide.
I apologize, and I'm not arguing with the court, but the line that our surveyors used in an attempt to be ultimately fair, I believe, they established a line at 1 foot, not 1 foot above mean high water, but at 1 foot, and that exceeded the readings.
I don't understand. It's 1 foot above the mean higher high tide line.
No, sir. No, sir. I'm sorry. It's not. It is 1 foot above the 1929 tidal datum plumbing, which mean high water, I believe the values were reported at around 0.46 above that same datum.
Isn't it critical to your position that we find mean higher high water and mean higher high tide to be synonymous?
I'm not sure I understand the question. I don't believe so. What's critical to my position here is that if you go through Lutz, it is clear that what they were looking for, as they said, what they were looking for was something where you got a great number of measurements over a time period in order to give you a stable boundary.
Well, again, but it maybe it's just semantics.
Yes, ma'am.
But one depends upon tidal influences, and one is independent of tidal influences.
No, ma'am, that's not true.
Isn't that why the NOAA started not certifying these results?
Ma'am,
because
the reason NOAA stopped certifying is because they said that the influence of the tide, it is there, but the influence of the tide is depressed in this area to an extent that they are unsure of whether they are picking a tide, what they call a tidal high. But NOAA will tell you, they will certify a mean water level, meaning the water level, the place where you will find water the great majority of the time.
Well, again, it seems to me that the focus has been whether the high water is influenced by tide or not. And right. I guess the critical question is we have to determine whether that's important to the Lutz analysis.
You're saying my focus has been on that. I'm sorry.
It appeared to me that a major part of the Lutz decision was that the mean high or high tide had a tidal element to it, and your mean high water doesn't have a tidal element to it.
Well, it does. You cannot record a high water in the Laguna Madre, and even the state's witnesses could not say that there was no tidal constituent in those high water levels. What they said was, we can't separate out the astronomic influence from the meteorological.
Why would anybody want to separate that out?
Your Honor, I don't think the Lutz Court did. What the Lutz Court said on several occasions is that what we're interested in is the level of the water, regardless of whether it is caused by meteorological or astronomical. That wasn't an issue that was introduced by us in this trial or in this appeal. The state has argued the position that you must determine these astronomic constituents in order to apply Lutz. I simply have to invite the court's attention to the repeated references in Lutz to the fact that on the Lutz property itself, there is little, if any, true tidal influence. And they refer at one time to tide, as that term, I think they say, is technically used. I'm sorry, Justice Sims.
I get confused again.
Okay.
You keep arguing, and maybe I'm just being a little thick about it, but it's hard for me to understand the argument that Lutz or Lutz somehow applies here, because it says the way you set the shoreline is by measuring tides.
That's correct.
But it seems to me the problem with Laguna Madre, it's not influenced by tides. It has a rise and fall of water that's not daily, that's not even periodic, but it's irregular, and it covers any number of days at any given time for more water or less water. And then I just thought I heard you say that really there's not a tide influence here. But if Lutz is predicated on tide, why does Lutz even apply?
Lutz applies, I would submit to you, because it was the method for determining a civil law boundary established for a tract of land located in the Laguna Madre. That tract of land in Lutz is behind Padre Island on the mainland. It is, if there is no tidal influence in the Laguna Madre, that same thing would have applied to Lutz. But I don't believe this record will support that there is no tidal influence in the Laguna Madre, including in this disputed area. What it says is...
But suppose it's understood, suppose it's accepted that the water line has changed. Let's suppose it's accepted. The parties agree that in a circumstance occurred over the years, and so the historical data is no longer accurate because the boundary line has changed. Then what would you say is the rule for determining what the new boundary line is in the Laguna Madre, based on Lutz?
I think the rule is the same as it was in Lutz, and that is You basically follow the water and determine where the interface is between the water and the land, and you make that determination of the interface between the water and the land by determining what are the average of the highest waters over a period of time, and you compare that to a primary gauge that has been run for 19 years. And if I could read to the court, it says, in Lutz itself, on page 180, it says, obviously, the greater number of highest water readings average, the nearer we come to a figure or level which applied to the ground as a line will reflect a more regular and permanent shore characteristic than any other. And they go on to say in other places, one thinks of shore more in terms of the water's edge. And all I'm trying to say is astronomical tides don't tell you where the water's edge is. What tells you where the water's edge is on most occasions is what is the actual elevation of the water at that location.
A problem that we have with your position,
all right, sir,
is that if it weren't for the intercoastal waterway, you would claim all the way to Padre Island.
I think that's inaccurate, but I understand that that has been a concern of the court, and I'm glad you raised it.
Here's
the fact of the matter is, based on exhibits introduced by the state in this case, and based upon what the observation of the only human being that we know of that was on both sides of the Laguna Madre at the time these grants were given, there was water in the Laguna Madre. How much there was and where it was located, I don't know that anyone can know. And I think it is a very poor means to determine that, to try to piece it together. But what we do know is that De La Fuente, who surveyed all of Padre Island and who treated it as an island completely surrounded by water, was the guy that also surveyed one of the tracks we're involved with here when he called for that self-same body of water, the Laguna Madre. What I'm saying is, what I would say to you, Your Honor, is that we can't tell you where that line would be today because the situation is not as it was at the grant, we suppose, because there's now a channel through there.
Although there are arguments made that nothing has changed.
I understand that, but one of the citations one of the exhibits that the state you introduced was both a report and a map of then Lieutenant Meade in 1845 and 1846, when for the U.S. Army he was surveying the Laguna Madre. He reports water. He reports the existence of this large mass of ground, but he reports, as I read the report, he reports there's water present. We know from the state's own exhibits here that there are times when there is water present. We know that, as a matter of fact, on the south part of this property, in the so-called hook, there is always water present. So I think what the state has done is to say to this court, you need to speculate with us that, as a matter of fact, there was no water there when it was surveyed by De La Fuente and by Conover.
Mr. Ratliff,
yes,
your brief at page 32,
yes, sir,
before your motion for hearing said the present location of mean high tide establishes the boundary.
That's true, sir.
That's what your brief says. But your argument on rehearing is, well, it's not really the mean high tide. It's some high level of water. Isn't that correct?
No, sir.
And you're re-arguing Lutz to say the Lutz permits a different high tide.
When I said mean high tide in the brief, I was using it as I think the court said it was using it in Lutz. And I just gave it to Your Honor. It means the average of all of the daily highest readings.
Well, let's go to the next point. You said you cannot establish the boundary based on mean high tide. We have no idea where that boundary is.
Not today. Today, I certainly can establish it.
Well, you can establish, your evidence establishes 1 foot. If I misunderstand what you mean by 1 foot.
No, sir. Go ahead. Well, I'm sorry.
I don't mean to be arguing about it, but in your brief, you say the court says that you have a boundary that could be east of the intercoastal waterway, and you say you never said that, and that's not your point. I understood at the argument in San Antonio,
yes, sir,
that if you followed strictly Lutz, mean higher high tide, this one I understood your argument to be, it could put a boundary east of the intercoastal waterway, but your surveyors, to make sure that there was no issue about it, established the boundary line at 1 foot, and I understood you say above what they calculate, we mean higher high tide now, I don't know what 1 foot now means, but that by doing this 1 foot, it brings the boundary to the west side of the intercoastal waterway. Isn't that correct?
No, sir. I really must apologize to Your Honor for being unclear. First of all, let's go to the 1 foot. The 1 foot utilized by the surveyors for the Lincoln Memorial Foundation is 1 foot off of a uniform datum that is constructed on a theoretical model inside the earth. It allows you to reference tidal measurements to a common datum, normally referred to as the 1929 datum plane. So the 1 foot would be that measurement, not 1 foot above mean high water. Other measurements, both here and in other parts of Laguna Madre, when they mention, I believe Lutz mentions a 0.46 or a 0.42, I don't remember. That is a level above this theoretical sphere inside the earth called the 1929 datum. It is the way that surveyors know they are referring to, that they've got everything on a common base. Now, what I understood, and I went back and looked, but I don't remember this exchange, but in San Antonio, I thought the question was asked me was, well, if we disregard the intercoastal waterway, then didn't one of your surveyors or something say you'd have to go all the way to the island? Well, first of all, I don't think under this court's decisions, previous decisions, but certainly under Brainerd, I don't think you can disregard the fact that there is a body of water there that contains waters of the Laguna Madre. They have been contained now by a government project, but the waters of the Laguna Madre are there, and they're rise and fall, not totally astronomical, only a small portion of astronomical, but their rise and fall can be recorded by the tide gauges that NOAA, in cooperation with the state of Texas, put in the very area in dispute. And so there is, if you go back to what Luke said, you go to the water, you follow the water. There is water there that can be followed, and it maintains the riparian nature of the tract, or the literal nature of the tract, which everyone seems to agree it was intended to be.
So we're incorrect in concluding that your boundary line puts you in the middle of the Laguna Madre.
That's
your
correct.
Your boundary line is somewhere to the west of the edge of the Laguna Madre.
A tidal boundary, Your Honor, with all due deference, a tidal boundary based upon mean higher high water, by definition, cannot be in the middle of the Laguna Madre, because mean higher high water defines the intersection of the edge of the Laguna Madre.
Well, I'm accepting that. I'm asking about your evidence.
Okay, yes.
I'm trying to determine whether you have any evidence of a boundary line that's to the west side of the water of Laguna Madre. Your evidence seems to put the boundary, however you calculate it, at some point in the Laguna Madre.
No, sir,
it doesn't. Where is the line that's west of that water?
Because I'm afraid I misunderstand, Your Honor. The evidence we have in the record is if you take the averages of the water levels, as we say Lutz says we need to do, and you average them, you will come up with a line, with a datum plane that if you place it against the bank of the intercoastal on the west side, it will fall slightly below the 1 foot elevation that was used by the foundation's surveyors. There is evidence that there is a line, and the state doesn't even contend that you cannot determine the average height of the water in the Laguna Madre and in the channel. And so there is a line, Your Honor, that is on the west side, and it is below the line that the Memorial Foundation surveyors chose to utilize because it is on a bank. And so, you know, you're kind of quibbling over, I mean, not you, but I mean, you would kind of be quibbling over something that makes no difference.
We've used up time.
I'm sorry.
I have a question. I want to make sure we clearly understand exactly what the record shows. You say in your brief that you can follow loops, that you can take the measurements and use the daily tile gauge numbers and come up with an average. Was that done or not?
Yes, ma'am. Dr. Flick did it, and he verified that the line utilized by KMS surveyors was actually above the value for mean high water measured in
but
the area.
Why would you take the line that is actually determined by mean high water?
For two reasons, Your Honor. One, the surveyors, and the testimony is that they adopted that line because they believed it was, in fact, conservative based on everything they knew, not only about the tide levels in this area, but throughout the Laguna Madre.
If you weren't conservative and you took the actual line, and
yes,
Lutz called for it, where would the boundary be?
It would still be on the west bank of the intercoastal waterway at this time, Your Honor.
Why didn't you choose that line, the actual
Lutz
line?
I suppose now, in view of the questions I wish we had, we thought we were being conservative as far as the state was concerned. And honest truth is, Your Honor, on a bank with this much clearance on the water, the movement of 2 or 3 inches doesn't affect anything. Where it does have an impact, but where we took the more conservative approach is down in what's called the hole on the south end of the track, where you don't have that deep cut. You then have the more gradual shoreline. But we thought we were doing something that was fair.
How much land is at stake here? If you choose the actual loose line versus your so-called conservative line, how much surface land is that?
It wouldn't affect it at all, no. Being Gannon Valley, I haven't ever calculated it down in the Hook area, but it would be minimal.
Are we talking acres, miles, feet?
Acres would be my judgment.
How many?
I don't really know. Because we never tried to gauge what's the difference between the line that we believe that the surveyors and I believe should be run with the actual determination based upon the average of the day of high water. We just don't have that information.
In your brief at page 2, the very bottom, you say the state's witnesses admitted that the shine line was not determined in accordance with the Lutz regulation.
Yes.
Can you give us a record site for that?
Yes, ma'am. If I could, could I look while I'm... We'll certainly file a letter, but I think the state has always conceded that's not a water boundary. It is a line that he based upon a historical reconstruction that the water may get to 1 or 2 times a year, but we'll give you that. We'll give you those record sites.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear arguments and respond.
May it please the court. Mr.
John
McHale,
may it please the court. Justice Jefferson.
Mr. McKenna, are the terms mean high or high tide and mean high water synonymous?
If properly used, they are. As used by Dr. Flick, they are not. In the Lutz case, the phrase, now it didn't have higher in it for this part I'm quoting, mean high tide or mean high water were used interchangeably. but never the way that Dr. Flick used them. That is, he is not simply using a different term. He's using a different methodology. In the Lutz case, I believe at page 180, I'll check my site, there is a reference to a NOAA report of 1951. A necessary part of the Lutz analysis was to compare your readings that are local to the tract with some gauge that has had a tidal epoch, an 18.6 year set of readings. That's a necessary step that the Lutz court includes, and it cites the 1951 report. That's not mentioned in the opinion as the Marmer report, but we all know it as the Marmer report of 1951. It is the same report that was discussed in the trial and appears in the trial record. It's the same report that appears in the NOAA report that is much criticized as being a change of position, but it's no change of position. The NOAA report in 1995 applied the 1951 Marmer methodology. It says in order to do that, one must have sufficient stability of measurement in order to make that epoch comparison. Dr. Flick did an arithmetic calculation that is a meaningless calculation. It doesn't reflect the regular flow of water. It doesn't reflect a regular perceptible tide. It's not measured even with the proper length of a tidal day. It is an averaging of some numbers, never correlated to an 18.6 year epoch, never correlated to a NOAA methodology.
Did you all do that?
We tried, and we determined, and there's testimony from our surveyor and our scientists, that the no mean higher high water could be determined. After that evidence had been given by deposition, at trial they gave the same evidence, and the NOAA report, which had come out in 1995, gave the same report. This is an area, Your Honor, that reminds us of the difficulty of artificial precision. That is measurable and precise.
Here's my problem.
Yes, Justice.
Lutz seems to be the land at issue in Lutz seems to be identical to this land. Is there any difference at all?
Let me tell the court two differences. And there are many, and we've briefed many, but two differences that are very important. One is the Lutz tract is south of the Arroyo Colorado and south of Port Mansfield. It is south of the corridor of four gauges that NOAA has said cannot support these measurements. It is south of there. A second distinction that I think is much more important, although I don't think it's pertinent to the area you were asking about, but much more important. In Lutz, the record was clear, and the fact findings were so, that the patterns of regular covering and uncovering that existed at the time of the grant no longer existed. There had been change, and substantially so. So Lutz did not have the benefit, which exists in the very detailed factual record of this court, of showing the following, which is just manifest and not controvertible. At the time of the grants, this record shows De La Fuente standing and writing. We've got the triangle that he wrote, showing I'm not going to include these mudflats in the grant. And instead, at the grantee's request, at Salinas's request, I will give a different triangle of pasture land because to draw a rectangle would give unusable mudflats. Cano. That was for the Little Beretta in 1834. Cano, we have in this record, Cano, the surveyor, talking to Bailly. Bailly saying, now I have La Beretta grant, a big grant, standing over the mudflats, saying, can I have that umbrella of islands there? In this record, we know it as the Mesquite Rincon. A grant, a request that would not be pertinent if it had already been granted to him. So we have a record that shows a grant, we have a record that shows less than 20 years in 1846 and 1857, frequent mapping and surveying, always able to find identical features, always. And then we have testimony from petitioners' experts and from respondents' experts that there has been no change.
So you're saying that Lutz only applies when there's no historical data?
Let me be clear. I'm saying that at least Lutz only applies when there's change. There's another feature, Justice Owen, of Lutz that is most ironic because it's never mentioned by petitioner, understandably so. But an important holding, it is the holding of Lutz. The holding of Lutz, and the reason Mr. Lutz never extended the boundary eastward. The state owned the property before that lawsuit and owns it today. The holding is, even where there is change, it is presumed to be change in favor of the state unless the landowner shows accretion towards the upland in toward the islands or the other areas that favor the state.
But you seem to be, this argument seems to be that the boundary is not the total, that it was just a different boundary.
And Justice Hecht, you've put your finger on the oddest pun that exists in this case. And it again is a pun. Mean high or high water versus mean high or high tide are synonymous if properly defined, but a pun when misused. Literal is a most intriguing problem. If literal means that the upland boundary is measured by some natural feature that is regularly covered and uncovered by the waters of the sea, or it can be fresh water if it's a river. If that's what literal means, which I think it is what it means, this is literal.
Well,
if literal means...
But the regularness of it is infrequent that it's hard to say it's regular.
I'm going to come right back to that because, Your Honor, that is one of the most lapses in respecting our factual record that the two petitioners and the two amicus have done. The infrequency that they suggest is unfair and not true to this record, but may I come back to that in a moment. If literal means what petitioner says, if literal means I have daily and continuous access to the water from my upland, to water my cattle, to do whatever, if that's what it means, the grant was not literal in 1834 for Little Beretta, 1804 for Beretta, 1809 for Mrs. Lincoln. It was not literal at any time ever. And for them to say, well, that's the definition of literal, and this is a literal tract, and therefore, where's my water? The only closest water is the Intercoastal Canal. Give me that water. Is to change the nature of access they had. They had access with such frequency, begging the question you asked, such frequency as the water came up and receded, and not otherwise. And they have that today in exactly the same regularity. And what I want to do, in the flip book that the court saw last March, the only difference in this today is that down here it says April 2001 instead of March 2000, at tab 2 is a water map. This is not a hurricane water map. This is in May of 1995. Petitioners and both amicus would say this water only reaches the shine line once or twice a year during extreme storm or hurricane weather, and that's false, and that's not what the record shows. That is false. And the record shows, here's an example, in May of 1995, and there are many other examples at Exhibit 100 in the record, Defendant's Exhibit 100. Look at the next day. The water doesn't rush up like a tide and rush back. The water comes up and stays and stays and stays. And this is not a hurricane bringing a short sweep of water. This is something that has happened regularly, according to their own expert, a longtime observer. It happens regularly. It regularly covers and uncovers the mudflats with the water of the sea, but not on a daily basis.
But
how frequently?
You promised me how regularly.
Yes, Your Honor. Fortnightly, monthly, semi-annual, and annual tidal constituents are detectable in large amounts and had big impact. And the variations that I think are helpful to look at in this flip book are tab 10. At tab 10, do you see a red line that shows regularity of ups and downs? And it does year after year. It did in the litigation of Humboldt v. Sun in 1950 after the Intracoastal Waterway had been dug. It had the same kind of frequency. It's not daily. Look at the daily. The blue line is what Dr. Flick says is the tidal movement. Well, that's not right. That's averaging in some fashion some set of numbers that almost never gives any guidance of where the water really is. It is precise because he did arithmetic, but it's inaccurate. It tells us nothing about where the water is. The green line is NOAA's predictor of, if you only look at tidal measurements, it would have the ups and downs on a regular basis. And what this showed was that the NOAA predictor could show about 60% of the water movement, but not all. But the water comes back and forth year after year, not every month, but regularly, not once a year, not twice a year. And in different parts
where
of our...
Where on here is your line?
Our line is the what Mr. Ratliff said. Where does the water impact the land? And that was surveyed by looking with feet in the water and tools in the air, and pictures replete show the surveyors at work as they marked meanders. Now, meander is not the boundary. A meander is a depiction of the boundary. Mr. Schein marked more meanders than anybody else ever has. And, Your Honor, get this. They are substantially the same depiction as the meanders of every surveyor, map maker, and judge before him. And get this. No expert witness at trial, none, criticized his placement of any single meander. Not a single one was criticized by any expert at trial. He used techniques that did not have arithmetic artificial precision. He looked at the intersection of the water regular, over and over, and the land.
Here's our one problem.
Of course. That.
And that is that it's not Lutz.
It's correct. That's
not, it's not very scientific.
It's neither Lutz nor is it precision arithmetic scientific, but there is, in the record, the phrase had four words, multiple logistic regression analysis, demonstrating in all scientific probability that this inundation repeated throughout the boundary of the Schein line with regularity year after year. Let me show you one thing, Justice Heck, that I think is lost sometimes in the rhetoric and the shortcutting that happens in briefing. Some parts of this 55 square miles is inundated more often than not. Other parts are not inundated as often as they're inundated. But the line by Clonch and Lothrop, the petitioner's line, would say that even Tract 304, if you look at tab 14, Tract 304 has many, many days of observation. 72 days flown, it is inundated, 12 it is not. Your Honor, this was only done in a 6-month period and there were days not flown. Pretend that every day was dry if not flown, and that's not, no evidence saying that so, but suppose so. It is inundated more often than not, and it's measured not on storm days or hurricane days, as is sometimes suggested in rhetoric. The last three pages show the days that have no storm and no hurricane impact anywhere in the Gulf. And yet, that area, clearly not fast land. Clearly, the waters of the sea bathe that with regularity. When it's not bathed, its features look like the landscape of the moon, Your Honor. It is flat forever, and the slightest water will cover miles. And so Lutz, here's what I think. I have a responsibility, and Mr. Ratliff has a responsibility today, that are very specific to one controversy. The court has a much broader responsibility. It's this controversy, and it's, will your analysis and opinion be used constructively or misused or misunderstood in other contexts that are not before the court? And that's a proper concern that this court has to worry about. Let me give a suggestion. One suggestion. The Lutz case was judicial efforts, intellectual, care, painstaking, but using the worst tools available for litigation. Almost every time that this court has a controversy where it needs to decide rules of applicability, it has a fully developed factual record. In the Lutz case, on rehearing in this court, most of the evidence was dumped in affidavits and say-so and briefing. And it never had the kind of development that Justice Garwood and the rest of the court could have benefited from, of knowing about the 37 tidal constituents, the differences between fortnightly and twice-a-day tides, of knowing what's the intersection between a tide and the land.
So you're saying Lutz was wrongly decided?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying that Lutz has apparently worked very well on the Gulf Coast. I'm saying that Lutz is appropriate when one is looking for something which that court was looking for.
Here again, I just had a hard time with Lutz because it talked about mudflats. It talked about almost precisely this kind of property. And it said, it was very specific, it said that there isn't a tidal influence, almost no tidal influence here. It's almost all meteorological. And it goes on to say that so far as most of the Texas coast is concerned, the only reliable way to obtain the average of highest water levels, it's not talking about tidal levels, it says highest water levels, is by use of this mean higher water level as measured by tide gauges. And it applies to mudflats specifically.
Why shouldn't we stick with Lutz, or if it's wrong, change Lutz, is what I hear your question. Lutz's holding was that a landowner must show change and accretion in favor of the landholder. And that holding is consistent with the law of land in many, many areas. I am a believer, as our cross points urged, that when Lutz looked at the Latin and the Spanish, they should have looked at more than they looked. Has apparently worked very well on the Gulf Coast. I'm saying that Lutz is appropriate when one is looking for something which that court was looking for.
I just had a hard time with Lutz because it talked about mudflats. It talked about almost precisely this kind of property. And it said, it was very specific, it said that there isn't a tidal influence, almost no tidal influence here. It's almost all meteorological. And it goes on to say that so far as most of the Texas coast is concerned, the only reliable way to obtain the average of highest water levels, it's not talking about tidal levels, it's highest water levels, is by use of this mean higher water level as measured by tide gauges. And it applies to mudflats specifically.
Why shouldn't we stick with Lutz, or if it's wrong, change Lutz, is what I hear your question. Lutz's holding was that a landowner must show change and accretion in favor of the landholder. And that holding is consistent with the law of land in many, many areas. I am a believer, as our cross points urged, that when Lutz looked at the Latin and the Spanish, they should have looked at more than they looked at. And our brief by cross point in the main case gave proper translations, including 1828 Cuban surveying guides, that gave guidance that was not looked at in the sparse record. I'm not sure. In this case, it is not necessary, and I think it would be dictum for the court in a case that doesn't require it.
But see, and I'm not familiar with the ownership of this coastal area, but the next place south of here will have the same problem that this case in Lutz has.
That's what they say. That's the King Ranch. And if one looks at tab 13, the King Ranch may well have a problem. Lutz has been around 57 years. Before that, the King Ranch had been, or its predecessors had been around for 150 years. And before we decide do they have problems, let's see, what do their deeds say? What litigation history is there? What patents have been done and accepted? Has there been change? Have a factual record developed, but it won't be this factual record, because if you look at a profile of the Laguna Madre, on the left is south, on the right is north, so it'd be like this. Do you see there is one area, and only one area, I colored it in yellow today, everybody's copy, that is a level that is above any standing daily presence water, and that's this area. The King Ranch is down here with great depth of where the bottom of the permanent water is. And I do not know the factual record that would develop if, after 200 years, there needed to be title controversy as to that, which I'm unaware has yet existed. And so I go back to saying the court has a responsibility that's broader than the responsibility I come to the court with. Do you write an opinion that presumes a rule for the King Ranch when you haven't seen the King Ranch record? The record here is that the title ban does nothing to tell you about what the court in Luce wanted to show. Page 180, it wanted to show you a line at which the physical features commonly associated with the upper line of the shore most conspicuously appear. That's what it was looking for. It missed by 6 miles for this unique tract.
Well, if the tract, I guess one thing that would trouble us also is if this case is unique because of the words of the grant, that's one thing. Or some other indication contemporaneous with the grant that this was what was being conveyed. But if it's unique because all land is unique and all coastline is different, then it would worry us that it would be chaotic to have no rules.
It's fair. That's a very fair question. That's part of the responsibility that we're talking about. If the rules fit and reach the goal that the court had of determining in some way that is replicable, it's not cheap to do even what Dr. Flick did in California to do all the measurements and all that, but if that allows different parties without coming to court to get somewhere, it appears to my client that on the Gulf Coast, that rule has not resulted in controversy that required lots of litigation, and the court's not seen lots of litigation. On the Laguna Madre side, this is the first lawsuit that's come to this court's attention since 1957, not initiated by the state, not initiated because of worries about stability or uncertainty. This, if anything, ought to be stable and certain. It's a prior adjudication after which there are no changes. The waterway was built. There was a lawsuit and an adjudication. No changes afterwards. That should be stable and certain. And yet, the Kennedys say we'd like to relitigate. The state did not initiate this. There may be fights at which the rule from Lutz does not fit. This court doesn't have a record telling us about that for anywhere except this tract. If that happens, Your Honor, is it better that the court have a bright line rule that misses the mark by 6 miles? Or is it better, as in the Lutz case, to say we can imagine there may be times when some other method will be better at ascertaining the upper reach of the water, because our goal is to locate where does the water of the sea regularly cover and uncover and go to the upper mark of that regular covering and uncovering. And a bright line rule always, it seems to me, should include some provision, as the Lutz rehearing said, that if something else is a better indicator and doesn't miss the mark by 6 miles, we don't mean that this rule be blindly applied when it makes no sense. And yet the whole model of this case by the Kennedy Foundation was to blindly apply a rule that made no sense, that changed a line by 6 miles despite prior adjudication, despite 200 years of maps and cartographers and courts and surveyors that all could depict and find just what Schein found. Even their surveyor, Mr. Potch, who had high regard for Mr. Schein. Mr. Schein was president of the Texas Surveyors Association. They had high regard for one another. He said, Schein found well. If that is what we're looking for, and nobody criticized Schein's meanders, as I've mentioned, to apply a rule that makes no sense
itself makes no sense, and the questions that were asked earlier by this court. In rebuttal, perhaps ask a little gloss on those. If this was literal in the sense of you had a boundary going to a daily presence of water, if that, and as you know, that's a pond, where, Mr. Ratliff, was that boundary prior to 1948 when the waterway was dredged? Find that line for us, because there was none. That you had to go to the Gulf of Mexico. Their boundary never had such a line. And were
to water?
To water? To permanent daily water. It had, coming right to its shores, where the Shine Line is today, water coming up and back regularly, year after year, perennitare is in the Latin is used, but not on a daily basis.
You're saying that Lake Laguna Madre at times was dry as far as the dredging of
the coast? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Not the whole up and down north to south, but this area that I've shown you on tab 13, there were times you could walk your cattle across, and there were times that your cattle would get stuck and drown if you tried to do that.
That's true of a lot of the coast, though.
Yeah, all I know from this record is it's true of this area.
Coming back to the toll, that concerns me too. You mentioned that if this were fresh water and someone wanted a toll right to go up to the edge of the water to water their stock, for example, you couldn't use this piece of land for that. This would not be a littoral tract under your surveyor's line.
I'm being too slow to follow.
When you were talking a minute ago, you said, well, if littoral means
daily presence.
You want to water your stock if this were fresh water. Well, what if this were fresh water and you wanted a littoral track and the call was to the edge of the Laguna Madre, assuming it was a fresh water body, so that you could water your stock? Here you could not use this property to water your stock because most of the time they would be dehydrated. They couldn't get to the water under your survey.
I'm not trying to avoid, and let me try to respond to what I'm hearing. In 1834, at the time of the Little Beretta, and 1804 and 1809 for the Big Beretta and the Mesquite Rincon, no cattle went beyond the area that it was shining.
I'm talking about in the abstract, hypothetically. I'm trying to apply your rule and say, it's littoral, but it's not really, because you don't have access a huge percentage of the time to the edge of the water. And that's
what I had said, you're correct, what I had said was there's a pun in the word littoral when I was talking to Justice Hatt, that if it means that it is bounded by a natural feature that has a regular covering and uncovering, then this tract is literal, which I think it is.
So if you wanted to sell lots, for example, and the call was to the edge of the Laguna Madre, and you wanted to sell them for recreation purposes, they wouldn't be very valuable for that, because most of the time you would not be able to use them.
That's correct.
They're not on the water, and that concerns me, because the call is to the edge of the Laguna Madre.
Oh, but it shouldn't concern you. If they would get exactly the same frontage and access that they would have had in 1834 when they bought it, that they had when they deeded it into themselves and out from themselves, when the deeds happened at tabs 6.
But it's in terms
they,
of...
They never had beachfront
property. But you're based on historical data, not in terms of... You're going back to historical data as opposed to regularly covered and uncovered by the water. Well, and I'm trying to get at regularly covered and uncovered. If that's what littoral means... These tracts are not truly littoral. If you bought it for recreational purposes, for example, for fishing, you couldn't get your fishing boat, you couldn't fish.
Correct.
Most of the time.
You couldn't fish except when the water did regularly
reach.
Which
is very few times out of the year.
At some places, it's more times than not.
In other places, it's not.
But it's exactly as much as it's ever been. And why would a court say that you should have more beach usage than you bought or than you've ever had?
Well, Mr. McKenna, that begs the question that I have. Let's assume that this is a littoral tract, but let's also assume there have been no changes over 200 years as to the movement of this water.
Right.
Does the historical data regarding the boundary, is that more reliable for the boundary or are tide gauges? I guess I'm asking, does Lutz have any application here where you have no change in, you have historical data as where the boundary was planted and you have no change in the water flow? Would Lutz have any application?
Our consistent briefing has been that the Lutz case only applies where there is a change. and that there's no suggestion by this court in Lutz that it meant to move established and previously adjudicated boundaries where there had been no change. No hint of that. It was addressing a problem where the record said there's been a substantial change. It said that. And that we now are looking to try to find out what did the sovereign mean, the Spanish or the Mexican sovereign, when they talked about the shoreline, a call to the margin.
If there has not been a change factually in the movement of the water or the flow of the water,
right,
would the court necessarily apply some sort of rule of boundary establishment that would trump the historical data?
What this court has said in its many decisions is that your prime purpose is to find the intent of the grantor, whether it be a sovereign or not, but especially in the sovereign cases. And even the Lutz case at least used the language that its effort was to replicate what was meant, and we fault its reading of the Siete Partidas, but let's assume that it's exactly right. It was not saying we're going to change what people got. We're trying to construe exactly what they got. Here we know. Here we know in the fact of this case what was purchased in 1804, 1809, and 1834. We know exactly. We know that the mudflats were beyond and were excluded. Here we know that when Mifflin Kennedy acquired the title, he didn't take the mudflats.
From the historical data, we know the mudflats were excluded.
Right.
If you could go out and measure the movement of the water up and down over the course of a year, and that movement indicated a different boundary, would that trump the historical data?
I think not, Your Honor. I think what the court...
And why would that not trump the historical data?
Because, let's premise whether there's change or not change. If there is change, then the historic data may not give you guidance, and you may need to look for other things. But if the historic data, coupled with no change, gives clear evidence of what was granted and there's been no change, then it's hard for me to understand why a court would say we will change that despite the intent and the lack of change to move, in this case, 55 square miles of ownership. It's hard for me to understand why the court would look for a rule that would change a clearly established intent where no conditions had changed from that clearly established intent.
Do you agree that, Petitioner, that if the mean higher water level had been used rather than a foot above the dam, that it would have resulted in a line west of the intercoastal waterway?
It would have been inside the intercoastal waterway towards the top. It would have been substantial. I do agree that it would have been substantially the same place, which proves, to my belief, that a line that misses by 6 miles where the prior adjudication, where all the prior map-maker surveyors and where the grant intended, can't be the right boundary for this. To talk about a literal boundary, comb through the cases and look in vain to find any other literal boundary that's a straight line. That's what this is. It's a straight line.
Yeah,
thank you. Questions.
Yeah, I do have a couple. Let me just make sure we're clear on this. Do you agree that Lutz, what they were measuring by tidal gauge in there was not true lunar tides, but atmospheric, mostly atmospheric, high water changes?
The combination of the two, as NOAA does, and yes, Your Honor, I agree that they were measuring what NOAA uses when they calibrate the tidal epoch under the 1951
model. But you agree that what was being measured in Lutz, seems to recognize that there was very little true tide effect,
correct,
in this area of Lagoon
right.
Madre.
Right.
And they were measuring atmospheric water changes.
They were directing that it be used, but with the same measurement of what you're measuring. That is, suppose water is rising over a 3-day period. NOAA says take the count only when it's reached a top. Otherwise, it's not a high tide, it's a rising water. Dr. Flick said, well, let's count it everywhere we find it. And that dilutes or narrows down.
But I'm just talking about Lutz. The methodology in Lutz was to take an average of the high water, even though that high water mark may have been caused by atmospheric conditions as opposed to true tides.
Yes, coupled with do that under the NOAA standards. It cited NOAA for its method for doing that. It's not just take measurements at random. is take those measurements that were consistent with the 1951.
Well, I agree, but I'm saying those measurements consistent with the 1951 were mostly atmospheric, not true tidal measurements.
Lutz Court didn't know it, but those were mostly governed by semi-annual, annual, monthly, and fortnightly tidal elements. And the Lutz Court just didn't have a record to tell it that. They had great tidal influences.
But what the Lutz opinion says, if I'm trying to...
Yes,
you're right. What we're getting at with the opinion says is they're measuring atmospheric tides, atmospheric high water primarily with these gauges.
They did say, take into account the meteorologic as well as tidal influences that occur, and apply the NOAA 1951 Marner Report. I think I'm answering your question, but I'm afraid I'm not.
It's also your position that the dredging in the intercoastal waterway didn't change anything.
Not just my position. It is the record that is consistent with both sides' experts and mathematical calculations by George Ward that showed the actual volume of water and how much could be drained by the channel, and importantly, Justice Owen, after it was dredged and used in the late 1940s. There was litigation after that.
No, I'm aware of that. I'm just making sure what
that is. But yes, it's a change, but not have any impact on where and quantity and regularity of the water.
In answer to another question that was asked, and I'm still unclear about this, the court, in its opinion, makes reference to the fact that the boundary urged by the Kennedy Foundation did not make sense because it would place the line somewhere in the intercoastal waterway. The argument has been made that that's a misunderstanding of what the testimony was. If you drop by 1 foot the line that the experts for the Kennedy Foundation set as the conservative line, if you drop that by 1 foot, do you agree with their statement that that still places their boundary line to the west side of the water, the water course?
It does, Your Honor. I'm not going to bicker with Mr.
So the court was incorrect in saying this line somehow was out there in the...
No, the court was correct because the point that the court, as I read the opinion, made was this, and I'm sorry for usurping time. The court properly made the point that there was no boundary prior to the dredging. The dredging itself did not cause some change in conditions, and that the fact of the dredging, if the channel were filled up tomorrow, if a new one were cut closer to their land, would they lose their claim if it were cut closer? If there are no changes to the conditions of the water flow, the bottom of the Laguna Madre is the same. And so I agree with Mr. Ratliff's statement that putting it one place or another would make no perceptible difference along the waterway, but it shows that we briefed six different positions that they have expressed in the trial court, and one of the most influential documents, I hope the court might reread, are two opinions written by the trial judge after 17 days of evidence, talking about the reason that there are so many inconsistent and difficult positions of where to put it is because they're proves too much. It could not have been literal before the waterway. The waterway is 6 miles from where their boundary is. The waterway didn't change the nature of water between them and that location. How could it become a boundary 6 miles over? So I don't think that's a mistake in the court's opinion, but it is accurate what Mr. Ratliff said about the difference would not make a great difference of location.
Thank you
very much, Your Honor.
May it please the court. First, I'd like to address, I think, what I was asked in the original and what Justice Owen was just pursuing. I would invite the court's attention to page 180 of Lutz. What page 180 of Lutz says was, actually, so far as real, quote, tide, close quote, goes, that is the situation in Laguna, since as the trial court found, any astronomically inspired changes in levels are insignificant, and the variations are due to meteorological forces. Court in Lutz clearly recognized that they were dealing with water levels that were not the result of tidal forces, and if you look at what the court's reasoning was, it made little difference to them. because they wanted the largest number of daily readings in order to establish the most stable line. And Mr. McKenna just said, if you follow the NOAA procedure, you throw out high water. Because if they don't meet the highest water immediately prior to a fall, NOAA doesn't count. If you look in Lutz, it says average the highest level of the water for 365 days. Under what Mr. McKenna said was the NOAA procedure, you would not have 365 days of readings because they would have dropped some.
Do you agree with Mr. McKenna that there has been no change shown here?
No, ma'am, I don't agree with that. Change in...
Well, he said that in Lutz there was change, and therefore that's a critical element of the opinion, and that here, I understood, the agreement was there had been no real change.
I don't agree with that, and I don't see how Mr. McKenna says that, since he said there were times when there was no water that would have been present adjacent to this grant. And now he said, well, of course there is the intercoastal waterway where there's water present at all times. So, and the fact of the matter is there was evidence from their witnesses, Dr. Bob Morton and others, but I want to be sure that I'm addressing the question. When Mr. McKenna says Lutz only applies in a case where there's change, I would invite the court's attention to the question of why the court granted writ in Lutz. It said we granted writ in Lutz because of uncertainty over where the location of the line is on the civil law grants. And they spent a great deal of time talking about what this court had ruled in the Bayi case dealing with Padre Island, immediately across from the area we're talking about. It spent a great deal of time talking about Galveston versus Menard and others dealing with what I think a lot of practitioners thought, that the civil law line was the so-called, quote, highest reach of the water in winter.
Is it your view that by the decision, well, do you agree that to apply Lutz, well, apply Lutz as you understand it, which
right.
is you just stick a gauge out there and you just measure the frequency of the water and you take the highest frequency that shows up there and that establishes your boundary. If that is inconsistent with the historical evidence about the boundary in this case or what the parties thought the boundary is it your view that Lutz changes the boundary?
Lutz would change the boundary. Simply just the same way the gradient boundary of a stream changed in Brainerd.
Except the gradient boundary in the stream changed undisputedly. Here there's no dispute that the conditions have not changed.
I thought you had given me one where the water level,
the historical
moving.
Data.
What? Well,
historical
you said.
Data. It would, well, let me press.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You would say that Lutz applies assuming there's a change in the water course.
I would say clearly there. I don't limit it to that. But
if there's no
there.
Change, then you would say that Lutz would override the historical boundary.
Yes, sir. And I'd like to speak to that for two reasons. Okay. If you go to Lutz and look again on page 80, they say one thinks of shore. Remember, that's what they're defining under civil law grant is shore. One thinks of shore more in terms of the water's edge than in terms of land, which is only occasionally and irregularly inundated. What they were trying to find is that place where the water level was the most stable and where you would be most likely to find it. And the state's witnesses agree that if you walked out onto this tract on a day-after-day basis and you wanted to find the water, where would you go? You'd go to the intercoastal waterline, because that's where you're going to find it the bulk of the time. I need to talk a moment, though, Justice Enoch, about this historical evidence. The state places great import on the fact that why, look here, Mr. Shine found these meanders. I simply would submit to the court, if you read every opinion of this court that has ever been written on natural monuments versus meanders, this court has always held the meanders do not set a boundary. The meanders are not anything. They are not even evidence of the boundary. The boundary is the natural monument called for. And the natural monument, I think everyone agrees in this case, called for, is the Laguna Madre. And the question that we're facing here is, okay, how do we define where the shore belonging to the state of Texas stops in the Laguna Madre and where the upland begins.
Don't you have to define it based on the way the granting party has defined it?
You have to define it on the basis of the way the granting parties defined it, using the rules that this court has always used. Remember, the call here is no different than the calls on Padre Island, no different than the calls on the Lutz Tract, no different than the calls in many others where the call is for the Laguna Madre or the Gulf of Mexico. And so the historical evidence here is that the King of Spain and the state of Tamaulipas intended to grant to Bayi the land, and I'm using Bayi for both, it's not, the land to the Laguna Madre. Because if you remember, when these guys are up on doing what they say is the meanders, they're making a call that says fence with the Laguna Madre. And this court, I believe, without exception, has always held, if it's fence with the river, fence with the lake, fence with the Laguna Madre, you are talking about the boundary between that natural monument, regardless of where that surveyor is. If you'll remember, in Rudder versus Palmer, which is the common law case, also done by tide gauges.
So there was extra land that was conveyed that irrelevant. They didn't need to do that. They were just being extra careful.
I don't understand.
And that triangular piece of land that they argue about, that
the triangle
would have been otherwise in what you say is the boundary, but wasn't.
I'm glad you asked that question. We've got to go back again to what the uniform holdings of this court had been on the purpose of the survey of Spanish and Mexican law. It was not to set the boundary in the sense of this is the boundary. It was to determine the quantity of usable land for agriculture, either farming or, in this instance, for animal units, so that an amount could be paid to the king. If you look at what this court wrote in Bayi, when you're dealing with, there was a case where, as I recall, it was supposed to be 11 and a half leagues, and it turns out this court said, yeah, but they granted them Padre Island, and I believe that was 17 and a half leagues. And what the court said is, you've got to keep in mind what's going on at this time. These surveys are not for the purpose of laying out the exact boundaries of the tract. It is to determine the amount of usable ranch land, in this case, for which the sovereign is due a payment. So to not survey the Mesquite Rim Cone, and I would invite the court's attention, if we want to look at what Mr. Conover said, go see what he said at the time of the Mesquite Rim Cone grant. In the Mesquite Rim Cone grant, he says, that tract of land adjacent to that previously granted, surrounded by water. You didn't even say it was a part of this. Well, obviously, if there was an intervening shore, then calling for the Laguna Madre in that instance would not have included Mesquite Rim Cone.
But the argument would have been the same, because if you're talking about just land mass for the animals, if your boundary was correct to begin with, that land mass would have already been included in the other one.
Because it was land that I believe under Cano was detached. That's what I'm trying to say. It was not, at least the way Cano described it, it was not a part of the upland grant. But the fact of the matter is it was
inside the Laguna Madre, and so it would not have been within the original grant, which bordered the Laguna Madre.
If I'm understanding it, yes, sir.
So the water course would have changed.
No, it would not. I don't think it would have. Well, I guess there would have been that change, because now everything we see about the Mesquite Rim Cone is it's attached. And I don't know whether we saw any pictures where there was water across that attachment or not.
Any other questions?
Could I mention one other thing? And I know I'm betraying.
I'd like to hear it.
I want to speak to something that Justice Heck asked and asked and asked. Regular. That's what the jury asked. Judge, what do you mean by regular? And over our objection, refused to answer. If you look at Lutz, Lutz rejected a holding below that you took the average of the four highest waters in a year. It rejected that you took the average of a few selected high waters. That is exactly what the state contends for here. And that's the way the jury got flummoxed. And the fact of the matter is, what the jury did find is it was possible to find mean high or high water, because Mr. Machetta argued you can't answer number two anyway but yes. If you find you can find mean high or high water, and the line of Clonch and Lothrop is above that line. So the big question here is, they keep saying regular, and the fact of the matter is, I go to the doctor regularly every 2 or 3 years. So that's, I think, the bias there. Thank you, Your Honor.
Any other questions?
I'm sorry to say so.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first case. The court will take a brief recess.